You are listening to an ADIS Journal podcast.
Okay, I'm Professor Richard Walker. I'm a consultant physician with an interest in Parkinson's disease, based at Northumbria Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust in the northeast of England. But I also provide a service for Parkinson's disease patients in North Cumbria, which is where I first met Caroline.
Yes, hi, I'm Caroline Cowan. I'm a 67-year-old retired primary teacher, and I live in West Cumbria.
Okay, thanks, Caroline. So just first of all, what we're going to hear about in this podcast today, we're going to briefly discuss the background of Parkinson's disease, thinking about diagnosis, symptoms and treatment options. And we'll discuss Caroline's journey through Parkinson's, with particular emphasis on the benefits that she's found through music and dance, and also the increased creativity that some people notice. And we'll look at a little bit of the background evidence behind these topics. So Parkinson's disease is a progressive neurodegenerative disease in which there is increasing loss of dopamine neurons from the basal ganglia, which is the movement center in the brain. Motor symptoms, which are usually asymmetrical, include arresting tremor, rigidity, bradykinesia, which means slow movement, and usually later on, postural instability. However, Parkinson's also affects multiple body systems, leading to what we call non-motor symptoms, which include neuropsychiatric problems, bowel problems such as constipation, bladder problems, and effects on sleep. Parkinson's is primarily a clinical diagnosis, although in cases of doubt, we can use something called a DAT scan, which, if it is positive, shows asymmetrical loss of dopamine uptake in the basal ganglia. And now I'm going to hand back to Caroline to describe how her symptoms initially developed.
Thank you. Yes. The first symptoms that I became aware of were in 2018, when I realised that my walking had slowed down quite a lot. Friends and family also noticed this. I also was a regular swimmer at the pool, and I noticed that my swimming and that when I was swimming, the people I used to overtake had started to overtake me. I also developed quite a fear of the water, that I felt insecure, as if I might drown, which led me to give up swimming. The third sign was a small tremor that developed in my left hand. And that's what sent me to the GP to see what this all meant. At first, my diagnosis was simply anxiety and depression, but I knew this was not right because I didn't feel anxious or depressed. I then, after a few visits, got a diagnosis of Parkinson's, and that was devastating, but in a way it was quite a relief to know what I was dealing with. I'll hand back to you, Richard, now.
Thanks, Caroline. We do find that people, when they're first diagnosed, often become very anxious about the diagnosis. And it really is quite important how the diagnosis is given, and also the backup that's provided, particularly in relation to information and support. And what I usually tell people is, well, first the bad news, you've got Parkinson's, but actually now the good news is that that means we can give you effective treatment for the symptoms that you've got. But what we haven't got is any treatment that actually modifies the progression of Parkinson's over the years. And as with all drugs, the treatments, we have to balance the effects of the drugs against the side effects. So I'm just going to hand back to Caroline, who's going to carry on now from what happened after her diagnosis.
Initially, when I was first diagnosed, I didn't need to take any medication because my symptoms were mild. However, a year later, in 2018, I developed breast cancer and had to have surgery and radiotherapy. And at this point, my symptoms got a lot worse and I had to take levodopa. Things actually got worse for me because the dose of levodopa, which I think was the normal dose that everybody starts on, was too much for me. And it interfered with the way I coordinated my walking. And for a time, I had to use a wheelchair because my movements were uncoordinated. When I got down to the right dose for me, everything started going a lot better. And I went on to be prescribed Rapinerol, which made me better still, and then Rasagiline. And once I'd got all three of these medications, things were a lot better. And I managed to peg clothes out on the line, which sounds like a small achievement, but it had been absolutely impossible before.
Thanks for that, Caroline. So the main mainstay of treatment for Parkinson's is to replace the dopamine that's missing. So that the levodopa that Caroline was commenced on works by providing dopamine in the basal ganglia. And the other thing, drugs that can be used are dopamine agonists, which directly stimulate the dopamine receptors. And as the disease progresses, we may need bigger doses, more doses, and we may need to use different drugs and different combinations. So thinking about the specific drugs that Caroline was taking, she was taking levodopa, which is really the mainstay of treatment for Parkinson's, even more than 50 years from when it was first licensed, and it's certainly the most effective drug. The second drug that she was commenced on is Rapinerol, which is a dopamine agonist. And the third drug that she was commenced on was Rasagiline, which is a monoamine oxidase inhibitor type B. And this blocks the reuptake of dopamine, therefore prolonging its action. So one of the things that we are aware of is trying to give effective relief to symptoms while decreasing the amount of side effects. And the side effects that we worry about in terms of motor symptoms are wearing off, where people's symptoms of their Parkinson's, such as their tremor, get worse before their next tablet is due. And the other one is dyskinesia, which is an effect of overstimulation. So usually people get restless movements and fidgeting type movements that can occur. So it's a balance of trying to minimize the wearing off without creating too much in the way of dyskinesia. And there's a recent UK study of more than 3,000 people who were followed up for up to 12 years. And what was found was that at 4 to 6 years, a third of them had developed wearing off. And by 8 to 10 years, this was 2/3. And for dyskinesia, it was a fifth at 4 to 6 years and 2/5 by 8 to 10 years. So they are quite significant problems that we need to concern ourselves with. But what I'm going to now do is hand back to Caroline to think about non-drug interventions that can help with Parkinson's.
Yes, and there are several things that I found very helpful. Firstly, I have always enjoyed walking and I got into the habit of doing as much walking as I could. Sometimes that wasn't very far at the beginning, but it gradually did get better. With my husband, Nick, we decided to walk little sections of the Cumbrian coastline. And this went on for about 5 years. And eventually we started in the north and eventually we reached Milham, having, I think none of the walks were anywhere beyond about 4 miles. The coastline was beautiful. It's flat and it's got a very well-marked path. So it was a joy to do that. The second thing that I enjoyed doing, which we've mentioned just now, is the dancing. I joined a local Parkinson's dance class, and at the first I was very self-conscious about my wobbly body, but I loved it, and I learnt the ballroom dances, foxtrot, tango, and many, many more. In the dance classes, people with Parkinson's usually dance with volunteers who don't have Parkinson's, and that makes movement very much easier. Sometimes when you're dancing, you can forget you've even got Parkinson's. I think it's the music, the rhythm, and the precise steps that you learn all seems to combine. I was encouraged to do Pilates by one of our Parkinson's physios way back when I was diagnosed, and I've managed to keep that going and really find it very beneficial. And finally, I joined a singing group which is run by our local Parkinson's group. And although I'd been in choirs before, I had lost, I think, the strength in my voice. Really, the singing group helped me to feel more confident, actually helped me to make my voice stronger and even to increase the range. So I've just, in the last few months, joined one of the town choirs. So I'm doing two singing sessions a week and really loving it.
Okay, thanks, Caroline. That's really interesting, the experience that you had. So there is evidence that cueing, which involves either auditory, tactile or visual regular stimuli, can help with movement in people with Parkinson's. And this is recognised in most guidelines. So interestingly, a few years ago, we did a study in Tanzania using a metronome in newly diagnosed people with Parkinson's who were at varying stages of the disease, but none of whom were on drug treatment at the time. And just after 3 weeks of an intervention with this metronome device from a physiotherapist there, we noticed dramatic improvement in people's mobility and walking. We're currently thinking about this and are conducting a study with researchers at Northumbria University, looking at how we can improve walking speed by increasing the cadence of tunes or songs which the patients pick. So the idea is that we can increase the cadence by maybe about 10% above their normal cadence and actually hopefully help people to walk a bit better and to walk a bit faster. I always say to people that exercise is good for everything, but it's particularly good for people with Parkinson's. So we always encourage people to keep active whenever we meet people with Parkinson's. And we conducted a previous study looking at high intensity interval training. So there's slight concern about this, trying to push people hard with their exercise. But actually, a lot of our Parkinson's patients got on very well with this and noticed quite a significant improvement. And there weren't any concerns about safety. So thinking about the literature, there was a recently published systematic review and meta-analysis that looked at how effective dance was for preventing falls. And it didn't show that much of an evidence that it was any better than strength and balance training at preventing falls. However, in a study of 50 Parkinson's patients, half of whom participated once a week for at least 3 months in contemporary dance classes, and the other half received a verbal support group, the psychological flexibility and quality of life were significantly higher in the dance class participants. So to look further at dance and how this might affect Parkinson's. There is currently a study in the UK looking at the effects of ballet. So we look forward to receiving the results of that. Exercise is emphasized by many organizations that are involved with the care of people with Parkinson's. And as long as it's safe, we definitely encourage this. So the benefits of exercise are emphasized by organizations such as PD Warrior, and also in the Chowdhury dashboard, which promotes dance and physical therapy. Thinking about the last point that Caroline mentioned, which was about the choir that she joined, people with Parkinson's often do talk quite quietly, and sometimes they're not particularly aware of this. So there is a treatment called Lee Silverman voice treatment, which encourages them to speak louder. People have found that taking part in choirs, particularly with other people with Parkinson's, can be quite beneficial. And my local group have coined the term singing gym for this. So I'm now going to hand back to Caroline.
Yes, I'm going to talk a little bit about the painting and creativity now, which I noticed really was quite obvious after I was diagnosed with Parkinson's. So since getting Parkinson's, I've started to play the piano again, and I find it's a really good workout for fingers and brain. It's something I've really loved doing since I was a child, and it really means a lot to me, so I really didn't want to give it up. Before Parkinson's, I played classical music, and I played for the children that I taught as well. Since Parkinson's, amazingly, the piano seems to have improved a lot, and I certainly improvise more. It's really changed the way that I actually play, and my repertoire has changed quite a lot as well. In addition to this, I've started writing songs, and that's something I never really did before. And so that's been something quite new. And there's a song that I've written which is inspired by our Parkinson's dance group, and you'll be able to hear that at the end of this podcast. Just one thing I'll say about the piano, because if I am playing it, I notice if there's any tremor, that it goes from my hands when I play, and it goes down to my legs, which seems very bizarre, but it seems to work for me. Now, I've always enjoyed, all my life, I've enjoyed painting. I haven't always had very much time for it. Also enjoyed sewing as a hobby. When I was a primary teacher, I did a lot of art with the children. But it's only in retirement that I had time to spend on painting just for myself. Initially, I started painting birthday cards for the family, and then it turned into illustrated letters because my daughter was working in New Zealand at the time. Then I started doing proper paintings, and I joined the Keswick Art Society, which meant that I could meet other artists. And then I felt that the paintings were sort of queuing up inside me to be made into proper works of art. I found that I'd got way more ideas for what I was going to paint than I had time to do, actually. I sort of found I couldn't stop painting, and it was really rather wonderful because it helped me to forget that I'd got Parkinson's. one of my paintings, which was a very light-hearted look at our village, was turned into a tea towel and sold to raise money for Parkinson's. This was followed by a very successful tea towel showing Cockermouth, and that has sold over 500 and been a very successful fundraiser also for Parkinson's. So I've maintained a positive attitude to Parkinson's, and being able to paint and play the music has been a big part of that. There are still lots and lots of challenges, and queuing up in the post office for me is very difficult because I think it's balance and I start fidgeting. And having grandchildren and their toys all over the floor is a delight, as it can be a bit treacherous with Parkinson's. Worst of all, trying to balance a drink and a plate of food at a party while standing talking to somebody, I think that's the hardest. So on that note, I'm going to hand back to Richard.
Okay, thanks, Caroline. That's so interesting to hear about this creativity that you noticed. So several of my patients over the year have described this, what they term release of creativity, when they've developed their Parkinson's. So if we think about creativity, it's quite hard to measure, but there are components that we can measure. So one thing is divergent thinking, and this is the ability to generate original ideas within a given time period. And you can test this by looking at measures including originality, fluency, flexibility, and elaboration. And this can help to characterize this. And this is what we're hearing about, these flood of ideas that Caroline was experiencing. The other side of that is convergent thinking, which relates to producing one particular solution for a particular problem. So needing to be quite focused. So thinking about that, there have been several case reports over the years that have linked bouts of creativity, such as painting or poetry, composition, with starting on dopaminergic treatment. And in a recent study of 20 Parkinson's patients and 20 age-matched controls, the originality in PD, in the Parkinson's patients, was increased the more the dose of their dopaminergic medication increased. In another study, looking at creative skills before people were diagnosed with their Parkinson's, this, if they had this, then this increased their flexibility and fluency in this divergent thinking. But those who had problems with inhibitory control had weaker convergent thinking. So they could have the divergent, lots of different thoughts and so on, but trying to focus on one problem was much more challenging. Previous case reports suggest that Parkinson's can lead to interest, creativity, and change in art in both established artists and also those who've no previous art experience. And it's thought this may be due to selective damage and agonist overstimulation of mesolimbic areas, particularly relating to dopamine 2 and dopamine 3 receptors. And taking this further forward, creativity in Parkinson's is often linked to dopamine agonist therapy and tends to disappear after subthalamic nucleus deep brain stimulation, following which there is a reduction of dopamine agonists. These are relatively selective for the mesolimbic D3 dopamine receptors. In a previous study, there were 27 right-handed Parkinson's patients who were treated with dopamine agonists and levodopa, and they were matched with people who had no neurological problems and assessed for various measures of cognition and impulsivity. And one of the way of looking at this is that dopaminergic agents, might increase the divergent thinking through the reduction of latent inhibition. And one of the problems that people with Parkinson's can develop on dopaminergic treatment is impulse control disorders, when they find that they might get increased gambling or increased shopping and have difficulty controlling this. But actually, it didn't appear that this was what was causing the increase in creativity in this study. Now, this is not just a problem in the UK. So there was a report from Kerala in India of two Parkinson's patients, one of whom was art naive and one who had child artistic skills, both of whom had this creative awakening after they started levodopa treatment. And there will always be a variation. So we've talked about the fact that a lot of these creativity is brought on when people start medication and sometimes can go away when they come off medication, if they're, for instance, treated with deep brain stimulation. But there is a paper that describes a semi-professional painter whose painting style actually dramatically changed from abstract painting to realism before he even developed symptoms of Parkinson's, suggesting that there may be an effect on visual creativity even in the pre-symptomatic stages of Parkinson's. I was just going to reflect now a little bit about what we've been talking about. So people with Parkinson's are not able to multitask very well. And what we generally find is they either walk or talk, but don't usually walk and talk. So we tell them to focus on the activity that they're doing, such as eating or walking. However, when we think about multitasking, such as Caroline was describing with her dancing, this can be important to try and maintain independence. I think it is crucially important how the diagnosis is given and how people are receive backup following the diagnosis, particularly in relation to information, to help with their coping strategies. Many people with Parkinson's find support groups where they can share experiences with other people with Parkinson's really helpful, but we do need to recognise that this is not for everyone. I do wonder whether some support groups could be more formally involved with support following diagnosis, as many groups do already. And then the question that we always get asked by people with Parkinson's is, when is there going to be a cure? And while there's nothing immediately on the horizon at the moment, I think there's a lot of exciting areas of development. And one particular area, which follows on from the COVID pandemic, may relate to vaccines. And obviously the technology for vaccines was dramatically accelerated in response to the challenge of COVID. So watch this space. And I'm just going to finally just summarize just some conclusions. So what we've heard about is that Parkinson's can affect people in many different ways, but has a major impact on individuals. It's a very individual disease with multiple motor and non-motor symptoms. And these can respond to drug treatment, particularly the motor symptoms, and also non-drug treatment, as we've been hearing about from Caroline's experience. And I think finally, it's just this interesting observation that some individuals, and Caroline is certainly one of those, notice an increase in creativity, usually associated with drug treatment. And we've talked about the different potential causes of this. So I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and thank you very much for listening to it. And it's goodbye from me.
And thank you also. Goodbye from me as well.
You can listen to more podcasts by subscribing to ADIS Journal Podcasts with your preferred podcast provider or by visiting the journal website. For a full list of declarations, including funding and author disclosure statements and copyright information, please visit the article page on the journal website. The link to the article page can be found in the podcast description.